Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Hey everybody, it's your host Rick Hale. Welcome to another Thursday edition of Paranormal Underground Radio on ztalkradio.com. Unfortunately, Karen Frazier will not be joining me tonight as her current pair of mom jeans have worn out and she's on a hunt for a new pair. So we say good luck in that quest, Karen. However, joining me tonight will be Kim Kowalczyk of the group Ghost Breakers, which is a group comprised mainly of the man and former the man, police officers. So, hey, Kim, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for coming on and helping out. From what I understand, that you have quite a lot of experience and insight into what our guest tonight has gone through, correct?
Yes, I was contacted by Darren and actually by Mike initially a while ago. He had written a book, which you'll talk about. Mm-hmm. And I had actually gone to the book signing, and that's where we had met. And then he had gotten a hold of me and wanting to know about whether or not we would be interested in looking into the stories about the house. And that's where we are right now. But he'll probably explain all that.
Right. See, now that's one of the things that always interests me. Anybody and everybody who is involved with the paranormal doesn't get into it because it's like, wow, hey, this is really interesting and I want to learn about ghosts and all that. No, we pretty much all have a story to tell. Some of us, you know, we deal with a spirit entity that, you know, in my case, which was this cute little grandmotherly type spirit that lived in my grandparents' house on the northwest side of Chicago. But unfortunately, though, there are some of us who have to deal with entities that are more or less sinister, deadly, and dangerous. And that's the kind of thing we're going to be talking to our guest later on about, Darren Fitzgerald. You know, there's the annals of the, you know, paranormal research are filled with that. Allegedly, the Amityville Horror was one of those kind of cases. However, I think that was pretty much largely discredited by now. Would you say, Kim, with what you've talked with Darren about, that this was probably a very dangerous entity or entities that they were dealing with, correct?
Yes. I don't know that there is actually an entity. Mm-hmm. I know if people have read the book, you'll be able to pick out there's many stories. This is over a long period of time. But yes, definitely dark entities that are involved with all these people.
Right.
And some of the stuff is really scary. Mm-hmm. And you wonder why people stayed, although he'll explain that some people didn't even stay a day.
Yeah.
But that actually even owned the house. But it intrigued me. My personal experiences over the years, I have never had a bad experience ever.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what the stories were. So that was one of the main reasons that I decided to accept the case when mm-hmm. the time comes that we can get into the home.
Yeah, that's, I've unfortunately, though, you know, some of us investigators who are, you know, idiot enough to run into people's homes that have something like this, I have dealt, you know, personally with negative spirit entities mm-hmm. two times. I don't know if you know this, Kim, but I'm a Buddhist, so I don't necessarily believe in the whole fallen angel demonic thing. However, I do believe that there's possible that there is, you know, interdimensional beings that don't exactly have our best interests in mind. And, you know, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I have not read the book. So I'm going into this cold tonight, which in a way I like that, because just as our listeners will get a treat listening to what this gentleman had gone through, I get to hear it, you know, from the horse's mouth as well. So
Right. That'll
definitely be good.
Yeah, no, definitely. The stories are definitely interesting. Mm-hmm. And if I don't know how deep he'll go into the book, obviously you would like to sell the book, but it does involve more than just that house. It does involve somewhat of the area around the house, the actual neighborhood or whatever you want to call it.
Okay. Yeah, I've oftentimes heard of that. I know Atchison, Kansas is a town like that. In fact, that's considered the most haunted town in America, you know, and subsequently that's where the, you know, Sally House is, where the, right. we had the Pickmans on a few months back, and, you know, they told us all about the haunting that they had dealt with. But, you know, that does seem to be kind of a common thread in the paranormal. It's not just one house, it can be several homes, and usually that's because it's something that's on the land, not necessarily the structure.
Correct. You mentioned Amityville. I've talked to Alexandra Holzer. Her father did, Hans Holzer, he actually did the investigation for the Amityville house. And I'd heard something that he had mentioned some time back, and he also said his official take on the whole thing, according to his daughter, was that it was not the house itself. It was,
right.
It was the land around it. So, yeah, just like you said, that seems to be the case in all, you know, almost all, I would think.
Yeah. Cases. Yeah. I, you know, with Hans Holzer, I am, you know, I would love to have sat at his feet and learned from such a master. I've read all of his books. One of the first books I ever took out of the library when I was 8 years old was a book by him. Don't remember what it was called, but it was a book by him, because I remember because I thought his name was funny.
Yeah.
but yeah, I mean, he was definitely one of the greats. Definitely shoulders that we stand upon these days. So, you know, we could definitely learn from, you know, just studying his work. So I think we're going to be probably heading into a break.
Okay.
So hang on 1 second. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Alexandra Holzer, now, did she ever actively help her father with investigations?
Yeah, I don't know. She's written her own little book about her experiences with her father through years, and how all the people that he used to entertain and things like that. So she also has her book. I don't know personally if whether or not she actually did any work with him, one-on-one, like her father-daughter type thing on any cases. I think he's probably pretty much writing books and doing lectures by that time, you know, by the time she was old enough to go and do that. But don't take that as gospel. I don't know for sure.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's, you know, when you consider all that, you know, all the ghost hunting shows that are on television nowadays, you know, we can definitely learn something from the greats like Hans Holzer and Harry Price and Maurice Gross. And, you know, these are the guys, that we should be researching and using their methodology and techniques.
Yeah, so. A lot of them, they had a lot of insight. These people had the time, and they could, actually really look into everything, where most people nowadays, you have a day job. So
yeah,
it's not,
right.
You know, it's not, you know, they can't put 100% into it all the time. So there's a lot of stuff. Now, I wouldn't suggest that anyone actually follow these people. This is my personal opinion. You tend, when you follow people, you tend to be limited to their knowledge and what they learned. You really have to start thinking outside the box. You know, read everything, watch all the TV shows, and talk to all the people you can, and then use that to follow your own path. Because that's what we need. We need some, you know, out of the box thinkers these days. We're in the 21st century.
Yeah, so. Definitely. Well, you know, recently I wrote on the Facebook page for Paranormal Underground that, you know, I've decided to end my guerrilla tactics against Taps and the television show Ghost Hunters. You know, I kind of like use this place as a forum, because I don't really necessarily agree with their methods and their techniques. Also, it seems that they're incredibly anti using psychic mediums, and I'm, you know, a big believer in the science as well as the metaphysical. So, I was watching one of the episodes the other day, and I'm like, all right, yeah, you know, I kind of like this. Okay. I do like Ghost Adventures, though. I think I find Zach Bagans an interesting dresser, and his hair is phenomenal.
Their show is definitely entertaining, and I do watch them regularly, yes.
I'm kind of wondering if maybe he got scared from behind or something, and that's why his hair is, like, pushed forward. But no, we love you, Zach.
Yeah, no, Zach, I have a friend that lives in New Orleans, so she's a voodoo priestess. Call her Bloody Mary.
Oh, yeah.
And she was on one of their shows. They did the plantation in Louisiana, and I was talking to her, and she said that they are totally opposite from what you see on camera. They're very well, you know, spoken. They're very shy, reserved type people. So I thought that was quite interesting from the way they act on TV, because they are a hoot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't lie. If anybody came to me and was like, hey, Rick, you know, we like your style. You want to, you know, do something? I'd be like, yeah, sure, no problem. But I would, you know, thinking outside the box, I definitely think that I would want to have a, you know, a psychic on the show. And I have, you know, several friends who I feel are the real deal. So, yeah, I think that that's definitely something that gets lost in our technological country. We've kind of like lost that that metaphysical.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what your personal feelings are, because I know it's, you know, pretty unpopular nowadays to even, you know, use a psychic medium. But, you know, there are...
Go ahead.
Please. No, go ahead.
What I was going to say was, I've never been against using mediums. I've always been skeptical, but then I've always, you know, just career-wise, I've always been skeptical of anything. It's just my nature.
Sure.
But, I've been doing this a really, really long time, and it's come to my attention that there's no getting around the fact that the paranormal does exist.
Yes.
If for no other reason, it's because people believe. Granted, it's a faith-based belief system, okay? And if you're going to find out anything in this, you have to deal with every kind of people and everyone's beliefs. Not just, you know, you can't just go down the single road. You have to. Mm-hmm. And many people do believe that mediums play a large part. So it just recently, actually, we just did a hotel in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And I know this medium, and we brought her along. And actually, it's for right now, we use her as an investigative tool. Something like, I guess you would use a lie detector or something, but that's what we're doing.
Sure.
But we're getting used to her, and she's getting used to us, and we're going to see how it goes.
Okay. Well, let's you know, save the details for you know, after we speak to our guest tonight.
That's
quite all right. I have a tendency to ramble on myself. You know, ask Cheryl, our producer; she'll tell you. But I think we're going to throw it over to break now, and when we come back after break, we're going to be talking to you know, author and as well as artist Darren Fitzgerald about his book, The House on Hurley Pond Road. Play that funky music, white girl.
This is Karen Fraser, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com. It's Karen Fraser at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Station Identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, your favorite host, Rick Hale. And tonight on the show, we have, as we mentioned already, Darren Fitzgerald, author of the book The House on Hurley Pond Road, where this cat talks about the experiences that he had as a child that were oftentimes sinister and dangerous. And we're going to be talking with him about that tonight. So, Darren, welcome to the Underground.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. You know, it's always interesting.
Not a problem. Not a problem at all.
Yeah. It's always interesting to hear about, you know, people's real life experiences with the paranormal. It keeps it, you know, fresh and new and, you know, not always the same thing. So, and also joining us tonight, sorry about that, Kim, is Kim Kowalczyk. And I forgot you were there, dude.
I don't do radio much, so.
You know what? Neither do I. This is the first time I've ever done anything like this. I'm sure, you know, everybody can tell. But Darren, so from, like, you know, like I've said, I have not had a chance to read your book. But from what I understand, that what you experienced in the house on Hurley Pond Road was, you know, nothing short of dangerous behavior at the hands of, you know, what sounds like sinister, you know, negative spirit entities. You know, why don't you tell me a little bit about, you know, about the first experience that you had, you know, when you first moved into the house, and how long it was before you had that first experience?
As soon as my parents purchased the home, we did like a quick walkthrough. Our cousins actually joined us. So, and they had my cousin Jimmy's about the same age as I was, and another relative, Lisa, and my sister and I. We went upstairs. And, you know, of course, kids would patrol around the house, check out their surroundings, check out the new bedrooms. You know, it was really, you know, it was fun. Mm-hmm. So, my parents were downstairs with my aunt and uncle, and I was the last in line. So okay. Almost everybody's down at the end of the stairs. I get slammed down the stairs. So, you know, I try to explain to my parents and everybody, and they just blew it off as an overactive imagination.
Yeah, but when oh, I'm sorry, Darren.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, when you say that you got pushed, could you actually feel as if a hand was shoving you down the stairs?
Absolutely.
So, would you say that it really seemed like it was, you know, kind of like picking on you at first, you know, targeting you for, you know, whatever it was, you know, whatever's problem it was with your family living there?
I was the first one to be affected by it. And and believe me, from that, even at that young age of five, that was always embedded in the back of my mind.
Right.
You know, that you just knew.
Right.
And then I like a few months after that, my sister's allowed to watch me. Again, she's about 4 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And just a horrific day. Everything at that day was confirmed.
Right.
And now my sister got to actually experience what had happened. The thing was vocal. I mean, it came over the telephone. It was not, it wasn't pleasant.
Right.
It was demonic. It was deep. And, you know, we were told to leave. So we ran as we made a beeline for the back door. The back door opened all by itself and slammed wide open.
So basically,
I mean, we ran so far. We ran right to the Shepherds. Those were the people we were contacting at the time. And we tried to explain to their mother what had just happened. They said somebody could have been in the house. You know, this all got, again, swept under the rug as overactive imaginations, you know.
Right.
My mom believed us. My mom was the only one that actually believed us, and a deal was made. And when you read the book, you'll see how and why.
Yeah,
and after that, all that, it all died down. the home life was perfect. It was like a courier in all his painting. It really was. It was fantastic. I had a wonderful childhood. I wasn't an abused kid. My dad was great. We had tons of fun. We were a tight-knit family. And 1979, when my parents announced that they were getting separated, all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
Everything that you could imagine not being possible. Like, it's so hard for me to school. I have, like, friends that are very scientific. There is nothing you can explain. There is no science in the world that you could apply to what went down in that house.
Right.
And I swear to you, it was unbelievable. And it wasn't just me, myself that witnessed it. It was close to about 14 people who saw what went down in that house.
And now was that all family?
They varied in age, and they varied in belief. Some were atheists, you know. It didn't care who the audience was. At this stage of the game, it didn't care.
Right. Well, why don't you, you know, give us, you know, kind of a rundown of what it is that not only you had experienced in the home, but how long was it before, say, your parents began to experience something that wasn't quite so pleasant?
My mother had experienced things that she didn't talk about till afterwards, till after this was all over. But throughout the course of time in that 8 years, it was visible to her. She could see it in human form, but without a face.
Yeah.
And to think, and here's an ironic, I really can't explain to you because I give away so much of the book. At one point in time, my mom got woken up by this thing.
Okay.
And it pointed out the window. And the barn was on fire. And we have horses, we had horses and stuff. It was a beautiful home. Let me tell you something, this is not your typical haunted house. I mean, when you walked in this home, you were like, oh my God, look at this place.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. Beautiful.
Well, you always kind of wonder, is like, okay, what does a haunted house even look like? Because even, you know, a home in a brand new subdivision could be just as haunted as...
Twisted.
Yeah, some antebellum, antebellum mansion down south. So it's, you know, either way, you know, people do experience these kind of things. Let's talk about the physical assaults that you and your family had to deal with. Were the physical assaults an ongoing thing? And did they ever get, you know, kind of like weird and sexual, that, you know, what a lot of people, you know, they do claim that they deal with, it's such a violent haunting.
Actually, mine was physical. My sister was, this is pretty cool. I mean, it's cool, it's creepy, but it's odd. But we still don't know what happened to her within that small amount of time.
Right.
We found her unconscious. We found her unconscious.
Okay.
She was standing in the den, and I was standing in the doorway, and she looked at me and she went, "Help me." And I looked over at her, and you could actually see it looked, you couldn't see the arm, but you could see that her blouse was pushed in violently, and her feet were about 2 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
And then the door slammed in my face, locked. And I scream, I got my mother. And then my mother says something, the door opens, and Karina's on the floor unconscious. So whatever transpired in that, my end was, you know, I had bruises on my back. There's a pipe, you know, just mysteriously breaks downstairs. I have to go down and shut the water valve off. And it's in the wine cellar.
Okay.
So you can just imagine, you put yourself in that scenario at almost 12 years old. And, I got my ass kicked.
Okay.
Literally did. It was not a pleasant thing. And then towards the, it felt like you were being beat by a man. You know?
Yeah.
And then,
now, please proceed. I'm sorry. No. We experience lags every once in a while. So that's kind of what I had there. I had like a little second lag, but no, please continue.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm sorry.
No, it's quite all right.
And there was another incident was the, we were in the dining room and, I forget what I exactly said. I mentioned it in the book. I swear to it or something. Mm-hmm. And I got knocked literally from one end of the room, slammed into the wall on the other side, knocked unconscious. Mm-hmm. Just didn't care if you were a child. It didn't care what, you know, if you were an adult. It just didn't care.
Right.
The thing was incredible. You know, I can give you this really, if you can just wrap your mind around this, towards the very end, the magnitude that this thing had reached,
mm-hmm.
you look at it and goes, it'll kill you. This thing could have killed you.
Yeah.
It not only controlled the home, it controlled every light in that house,
mm-hmm.
upstairs, downstairs, every door, every window. It controlled the barn doors, the barn lights, the garage doors, the garage lights. I am not lying to you. It mm-hmm. actually changed the weather around the home. The wind was so violent that night
mm-hmm.
when we were trying to leave. It was unbelievable. You look at this home, it looked like a discotheque going off. Doors open and closing, windows slamming. And then, as we got into the truck,
mm-hmm.
this thing began to rock the truck. It locked the doors from the inside. It tried to roll the windows down. You couldn't start the truck. The truck was brand new. It was like everything you could possibly imagine in a horror film.
Yeah.
And this thing did this all at one time. It wasn't like this would happen here 1 minute, this would happen here another minute. This happened every single second. It was phenomenal.
Now, you know, oftentimes with negative hauntings, people talk about how the spirit entity actually follows them, you know, goes to the store with them, goes to work with them, goes wherever, or even follows them to a different home. Did you ever have any experiences outside of the home at, say, the grocery store or, you know, whatever, where this thing, you know, followed along and, you know, tagged along and it was still trying to make your life hell?
No, there was a barrier or something. Once we got over this bridge, not too far from the home, but still quite a distance, this thing was still rocking the truck violently till we got to the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got released.
Mm.
But it did follow us. I mean, we had, another problem in the other home that we moved in, but it was brief.
Okay.
And again, violent. And then we moved to a third home, even further away, but still in mm-hmm. the same town.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was there.
Hmm.
It let me know it was there.
Now, when you say that you guys crossed this bridge, was this a bridge over, you know, running water?
No, not at all. It was a bridge over 138. Was there water there at one time? It's real close to the water table.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, you know, as we all know that, you know, according to, you know, many superstitions, spirits cannot cross over running water. So when you say that you had brief encounters with it in other places that you lived, what exactly was it? I'm sure it probably wasn't quite as sinister as what you had dealt with in the house on Hurley Pond Road, correct?
Oh, not as sinister. They were brief, but it was just like it was sending you a message that it was still there,
mm-hmm.
still watching you, still knew what you were doing. And I can give you the one scenarios that a friend of mine, were, you know, getting out of high school now. Okay, so this is years later, and a bunch of stuff happens in between those years that are just unexplainable in my life. I mean. And again, you'll read about some of those that are in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But a friend of mine says, "Look, I'll meet you over your house after school." I turn around. I said, "Yeah, just walk in. You know, I'll I'm going to take a shower. Just walk in. I'll be out in a minute." You know,
right?
So he goes to his house. I go to my house. I hop in the shower. You know. There's a knock on the bathroom door.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "No, I'll be out in a minute. The knock mm-hmm. gets louder.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So I said, "Come on, man." I said, "I'll be out in a minute. Relax." The door split in half.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this energy.
I came out. What was left to the door actually fell in half in my hand. And mm-hmm. there was nobody there. And I was like, I remember looking up going, son of a bitch, you know, it's still happening.
I always find that a...
I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry about that. But then
oh, no, that's quite all right.
You would get these tidbits back about Hurley Pond Road. Weird things happening at the house.
Interesting. You
know? Yeah, it's like it would just... seems like it comes out to play, you know?
Okay.
Can I jump in a second?
Absolutely, Kim. I was just about to ask you, you know, how you became involved with Darren and, you know, the house on Hurley Pond Road.
Okay. I have a question for Darren real quick. Darren, do you believe...
Sure, what's up?
Do you think that you guys were specifically targeted, or do you think you might have been caught up in something more sinister because of the area and the house?
You know, I was just with a really good friend of mine, Michelle Ford, and we were walking that property.
Mm-hmm.
We got somewhat close to the house. I don't like going very near it, but she wanted to take some photographs of, there's a ruins of a house that belonged to a couple called the Lambs.
Mm-hmm.
And that burned to the ground. And I just think that thing is, we weren't targeted. We just ended up picking the wrong place to live. There was a part in the book, if you remember, a woman by the name of Barbara.
Yeah.
She ends up renting a room from them. That's a true story. That is all true. And she came to my mother with that. So, it existed before we were there. And we were talking about, I wanted to get back to the other point you made. You know, my friend Michelle and I were going back and forth, and she goes, you know, this used to be Klan area.
It used to be what area?
What happened here? Ku Klux Klan area.
Oh, okay.
I hate to mention that, but it's true, and it's a bad part of that town's past.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like talking about it.
Sure.
And you feel uneasy when you're on that land. It's just bad. I think the whole area is bad.
Mm-hmm. So, would you say, were there any other homes in the area that, did you talk to any of your neighbors and said, hey, you know, we got some weird stuff going on in our house. Are you guys experiencing any weird stuff?
We never mentioned it at first because, you go back then, you didn't ever mention anything like that.
Sure.
That's why we kept it such a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And recently a lot of people like yourself and like Kim, you know, everybody's standing up now and talking about these things. You know, mm-hmm. And that's when I decided, well, you know, people are now listening. This is great. You know, this is great. People are into this, and I do have a story to tell you.
Yeah.
And what we went through was just flat out amazing. Flat out amazing.
Yeah. Now, from what I understand, that the house is actually for sale now. Is that correct?
I think it's in foreclosure.
Oh, okay. Oh, even more so. Bad luck.
I kind of keep a little bit of the lid on that, but it was a rumor through the grapevine.
Mm-hmm.
And now you had mentioned, people have come up to me since I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one individual who told me he left around the same time we did for the same mm-hmm. reasons.
Okay.
And this is a respectable person in town. I got another piece to tell you, and Kim's a witness to this, too. During my first book signing, a man by the name of Tracy White approached me.
Okay.
And he says, thank you for vindicating my family and I. And I said, in what way? And he goes, we used to live in your old house. He goes, it destroyed my family.
Wow. It's amazing how something can have that kind of energy, which, you know, I think would lead a lot of people to believe that it's definitely more something with the land, you know, possibly an elemental type spirit. I really don't believe in like demons in the fallen angel sort of way, but it sounds like you were, you know, dealing with something that wasn't human. Would you say that?
Absolutely. You had to see it to believe it. That one scenario I told you about with when we were trying to leave that night with the rocking of the truck. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what pea gravel is, right?
Yes.
Very small stones. Well, that was in our driveway.
Okay.
And it ended up forming a wave and filling the back of the truck where my sister was in, holding the dog down.
Wow.
And still controlling the lights, controlling this wind, controlling the truck, controlling what was happening inside the truck, controlling the barn, controlling the garage. You tell me. I mean, that is a ton of energy.
Yeah. It's been my experience that human entities, they don't exactly have that kind of strength to affect, basically they don't really have enough strength to even show themselves, much less affect the physical environment. So now you said that the area was used as by the Klan, the KKK. Was there anything there that you know of historically that may have, more or less opened up a portal to allow whatever this thing was into the home and onto the land?
All I got to give you on all that, it's little rumor here, little rumor there. One says Indian burial ground on top of who knows what happened in those times. So whatever I tell you is nothing concrete. I have nothing to back it up, nothing to support it.
Sure.
But we do know it was a Klan area. That's the one thing I can tell you. What happened there? Unknown. Very, very secretive about the past.
Now,
I actually had another writer come in before I decided to write it, and he wanted to approach this more on a documentary level.
Okay.
And he went to do research, and he would go to the Hall of Records. They did not want to discuss anything.
Sure.
He didn't get anywhere. He asked me, "What is their problem?" I said, "I have no clue."
Yeah.
So that's all I have for you on that.
Darren, my reluctant co-host Karen Frazier has actually called in, and I'm going to be bringing her on, and I'm sure that she's going to have a few questions for you as well. Hey, Karen.
Hey, why am I reluctant?
Because you really like working with me, really, Mom Jeans.
I do. Mm-hmm. I adore you.
Okay, so how did the quest for Mom Jeans go?
I did not find any Mom Jeans. I actually had a dinner for the Guardian Ad Litem program tonight, so that's where I was. I was rubbing elbows with judges and important people.
Oh, well, now you are with the most important people in the world.
That's right. So we have Darren and Kim. Is Kim still on the line, too?
Yeah, I'm here, but I'm hiding in the corner.
Oh, well, you don't have to hide in the corner.
You don't have to do that.
You actually are the most familiar with this case. Darren, I'm sorry I missed the first part of your interview. So I'm going to listen for a bit, and just because I'm not necessarily sure, I have questions to ask that haven't already been asked. So I kind of want to just listen and sort of glide along and I'll pipe in when I got a question. How's that sound, guys?
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Sounds good.
I do have a question, Darren. I've read the book a couple times, obviously, because I want to get a background on everything. But should it be possible to actually get into the home one day? It seems to me that, I know you said you had a wonderful childhood and all that, but do you believe it took effect over a long period of time on some of the behavior of some of the people in your family, sort of like it was sneaking in or, having an effect on any of your family over the long period?
Yeah, my dad's drinking had increased. If you read in the book.
Uh-huh.
But my father, my father was not the kind of man to come home, bring the job home, never, ever. We never even knew our parents were fighting. How's that? I mean, to keep things on a level, they were so cool about it. I think my sister and I may have heard them argue twice, or maybe three times tops. But very, very kept everything quiet. Kept everything very quiet. But there was a change in my father.
And you believe it had to do with the entity or whatever was going on, right? You think?
I the increased drinking, the depression, and then, of course, my dad attempts suicide, same way with a pistol.
Wow. But, do you have a family history of alcoholism, addiction, or depression?
Not really, no.
Okay.
My father was probably they say that my dad was an alcoholic or whatever. My dad quit drinking for like 15 years, 16 years, quit just like that. When he went back to drinking, he was very sober. I've never saw my father completely drunk. Never, never. So, was he an alcoholic? I don't know. I think that was other people's opinion.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
You know, so, that...
And depressed? Not at all. I mean, you're looking at a man that had a sense of humor like you couldn't believe. God, he was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
He was just he was 6'7" and just a dynamite guy. So that's all I have to say about my dad, you know.
Yeah. Right.
And my mom, too. I mean, she was extremely brilliant, you know. And again, you know, Kim, you look back at that. My mom started drinking in that house. Oh, my mom never drank.
Wow.
And she starts drinking. So, and, you know, that was something that you would notice. Yeah, that was definitely something you noticed.
See, now that's amazing. I mean, not only do you have inhuman entities that are able to affect the physical environment, but they're also able to affect the thoughts, feelings, and, you know, general psychology of a person.
I got something to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
I had a paranormal person talk to me about it, and I went there kind of like on a dare. Got about maybe 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't like going near there. And there's a building not too far from the property. You can actually see the house through the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to skateboard in this parking lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend of mine turns to me and he says, does it really bother you that you're sitting here? All of a sudden, it was a beautiful day out. It was like July, I think it was July 16th or something. And I'm sitting on the steps, and I tell you, I went completely blank. And I actually watched my entire life that I sat there in seconds flash by.
Wow.
I could see the people. I could see my mom. And I became paralyzed on my left side from my left arm and left leg would not work at all. And when I looked at through the trees, I could actually see the image of a man shaking his head as no.
Hmm.
Wow.
My friend Ed actually had to carry, he actually carried me to where the property had ended, and I was fine.
So tell me, when that's going on, what does your mind think is happening as your body is not cooperating? What do you think's going on when that happens?
I have no clue. I have no clue. And ever since then, I like I said, we went for that hike in the woods, but we stayed very distant, even from that particular building.
Sure.
You know, my friend wanted to take photographs. So I'm like, okay, take photos.
So how do you deal with the psychological after effects of things like this?
You know, I think talking about them is great. I have I felt better after I wrote the book, and it was great to talk to people about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out that other people have had experienced some things a little far worse than you have.
Yeah.
You know? I remember when, God, probably in my teens, a woman was telling me a story not too far from Hurley Pond Road. Her kitchen kept catching on fire. And she ended up leaving the house because she actually found her baby in the bathtub.
Oh, my goodness.
With the water going.
Huh.
Yeah, that's a sign. That was a sign to go. That was
Well, the kitchen thing happens to me, but that's just, you know, my cooking. So there you go.
Okay. Well, see, there's an explanation for that.
Well, you know, to hear people tell it, it's supernatural how often I can make things flare up. But there you go.
Yeah.
And fire plays a big part in the book. So I'm just going to say that too.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems to be a common thing with especially with, you know, poltergeist activity. Now, did you guys first off, how did do you think that maybe this had affected you and your sister, you know, behaviorally, and it, you know, could have added more energy to this thing? Did you guys have any problems with that?
My sister and I, and to this very day, are the best of friends.
Okay.
And growing up, I think you could count our fights on one hand.
Okay.
It's kind of odd, you know, with that different age group, you know. Like, I was, you know, growing up, I was 5, she was 9, she had her older friends, you know, I was the annoying brother, you know.
Sure.
Again, things were terrific. And what you read the book, there's some things that I see and she sees that we can't tell people.
Right.
And you'll read in the book why. And it's amazing. And another part that I want to, you know, touch base with all of you on, this thing could also spell very well.
Okay.
It was literate. I mean, it could read, write. It obviously knew what it was doing.
So can you
perfectly?
Can you elaborate on that?
A threat. What's that?
Can you elaborate on
that?
Yeah,
it actually wrote a message on the wall.
Really?
And in spray paint. And again, the way this happens is that my cousin and I are playing with this train set down in the basement, and this is really close to, you know, my parents are separated. My dad's now living in Mattawan. We're staying in the house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually going to my grandmother's at this particular time. And we're playing with this train set till I'm getting ready to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear air escaping, you know, in the next room. So, now mind you, the paint closet's right behind us. I mean, the door was literally right behind us. So this thing had to open the door and take the paint out of the closet while we were standing there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we round the corner, go down, we turn the lights on, and in gold spray paint it says Darren.
Wow.
And in red spray paint on the other wall, and this is odd, it says Kareem, Tammy, Lisa, Jimmy, Fred, George, I will kill you. Hmm. I didn't meet Fred or George till years later.
Amazing.
They're dead. And George lived on Hurley Pond Road. Fred got killed on Hurley Pond Road.
It sounds like this this whole land amazing. Is completely cursed.
You know what? There's like story after story. I want to ask Kim something. I think Kim was working on doing a book on that road. Are you still working on that, Kim? Or
I'm looking and still doing, but I'm doing the area, like he said, nothing particular, but the whole area. And some other stuff. But, yeah, I'm still working. I'm one of those guys that's got all this junk in his head. I just can't get it down on paper, right?
Well, welcome to my world.
But I got an office full of crumpled papers, so I'm getting there.
Me too.
It's a process.
Yeah. Some of us are just naturally good at it, though, Karen.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, to get back at the road itself, and I was growing up as a kid, and my dad was taking me to soccer practice. House caught on fire right down the road, not too far from the original fire, from the Lamb's home. So they find out that a woman died in that, along with a dog. She fell asleep with a cigarette in her hand. You know, They rebuild the house. Burns down again.
Wow.
They rebuild it a third time, burns down a third time, and takes another human life. And then I remember, like, I think it was 74, a jogger was jogging down Hurley Pond Road, got hit by a drunk driver, got killed. And right down the street from the house. It happens again. Same road, same scenario.
So, before you go on, can you tell me, and you may have already done this, so I'm sorry, and if you did, just say I already did, what kind of a road is this? Is it a little private, quiet, residential road? Is it a big road where tons of traffic goes down?
The road itself, when we grew up on it, it was very quiet. It was just a beautiful country road. You have a series of... Our property just linked to one farm after another farm after another farm. So you just had the whole side of the road was nothing but farmland.
Gorgeous. So it was a rural road.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Today it's very developed and built up, but still not very busy. And then, like, the chances back then of these two guys getting hit by a car and killed, and their body outlines were on the road forever. Like I told you, my friend Fred got killed on Hurley Pond Road. When I wrote the book, I think I just completed it. And a guy at my other job turned to me and goes, my buddy just got killed on Hurley Pond Road last night, motorcycle accident.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and then I was in my 20s. And I was sitting at a bar, and a buddy of mine turned to me and goes, oh, this is John so-and-so. And I'm like, hey, nice to meet you. It's from Neptune, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting ready to leave, and we get in the car, and they left they left a couple minutes after we did. Next day in the paper, that guy died. He flipped over in the pond in his car.
Hmm.
He missed the turn.
Hmm.
And it's just, welcome to Hurley Pond Road.
What was the speed limit along there?
Yeah.
What's that?
What was the speed limit along the road?
Oh, it's 25. To do that turn,
okay.
You actually, I think it was like less than 15 miles an hour.
Okay.
And he actually went right through. And he wasn't, they said he wasn't speeding. And he ended up upside down. And they said he actually talked to the police officer. He said that he was warm in his stomach. Can he undo my seatbelt? And the cop leaned over, undid his seatbelt, and he died.
Wow.
He had internal bleeding, apparently, yeah.
Oh, the seatbelt was actually, keeping him from...
Keeping him alive, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It sounds like Hurley Pond Road is pretty much gaining itself quite a reputation for, urban legend status. Would you say that's true, Darren?
Absolutely. 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 Mm. You know, and I think it had to urban status back when we were children. I remember somebody turning to me and saying, how did you guys put up with, people driving by the house?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we put up with it just fine because we were the kids that grew up in the house where the guy committed suicide. So everybody would drive by. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was was becoming a ghost story then, I think.
Right. Now, I'm sure that, a lot of what you experienced in the home probably added to many of the stories, but were there a lot of stories concerning your house? I mean, did people walk past and be like, hey, well, that's the haunted house right there? Did you guys go to school and they're like, oh, you live in the house on Hurley Pond Road. Well, that's haunted. Did you guys experience anything like that?
Absolutely. No, nothing like that at all. Absolutely not. Matter of fact, my cousin Lisa, I think in high school, had mentioned that things had gone on in that
mm-hmm.
house to some kids in school. And instead of being picked on, they were very curious.
Hmm.
They were very curious. But I never got teased or questioned or anything. Everybody was very polite about it after the fact. I kept it a secret up until I was about 15 or 16, and I confided in a couple of my friends about what was going on. Mike Burke had known earlier, actually. He was the one I really confided in over it. And as we grew up, we experienced something together. So it was, amazing how this stuff transpires.
Yeah, the whole story, like you said, it's okay to be skeptical with anything with the paranormal, but you experienced it, your family experienced it, you guys know all too well the kind of energy, the kind of pistol this thing was packing. Have you dealt with any kind of, skepticism where somebody is like, that borders on cynicism where they're like, this didn't happen with you?
That is terrific. That is probably the best question. Yeah, I got a great friend of mine who is extremely scientific. And, I get everything from ribbons in time rubbing together, just obscure things that they just will not wrap their mind around. And I think Kim says it best to me one time. He says, if they don't believe, they're not going to believe unless they see it. So there's no way you can even argue with them,
True.
So yeah, I don't even try to argue with them.
Yeah.
But the stuff that went down Hurley Pond Road, I swear to you, is 100% the truth. And when you saw what this thing did, there's no way you can say it's, ribbons in time rubbing together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, there's no explanation for it, except the fact that there's a lot more to us than we realize.
Hmm.
We just don't.
Of course.
We just don't exist and die.
Yeah.
Something happens to us. And the decisions we make here play a very important role where we go.
That's a perfect...
I firmly believe that. After seeing that, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a perfect place for us to take a break. We take a top of the hour break here. So let's take a break and we'll come back. You'll stick around for a few more minutes after the break?
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll be back in just a couple of minutes on Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
I know what you are. You drive too fast, you smell so good, and you dress fashionably well.
Say it out loud.
You're a metrosexual?
Oh, why do I always get that? I'm a radio show host.
Kale, I want to be one of them.
And you can be. Join me on ztalkradio.com, 9 p.m. Eastern on Sunday nights. The show's called Perspective.
Hey, do you sparkle?
Oh my God, don't even start. Hang on, Spider Monkey.
Yo, what's up? This is the Black Eyed Peas, and we're here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in our lives, but nothing is more important than life itself. So when you drink and drive, you're risking the life of yourself and the lives of everybody on the road. Don't plan to drive, just plan ahead.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
For that, sure.
Okay. And we're back, everybody. Boy, we just ran that right down to the wire. I was trying to get up to speed with our guest so that I don't sound like Well, like I usually sound. Let's be honest about it. So we're back with Kim and Rick and Darren, and we're talking about the house on Hurley Pond Road. Excuse me. And so during the break, you were talking about the first couple chapters of the book being before you were born, and you wanted to kind of clear that up.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, think the entire book is 100% true, and that's it's not. And just to clear that up is, you know, the first two chapters, the deaths, from what we understand, one definitely happened. The other one's a question mark.
And, well, hold on.
Fabricated the stories around those.
Well, okay, hold on a second, Darren. In the paranormal, basically, we all pretty much go on in integrity as well as, you know, believability and credibility. Now, what you're saying is that some of the stuff in the book was fictionalized. How is it that, you know, anybody else is able to believe that? Well, you know, everything that you talk about, other than these fictionalized things, is actually real. How would you convince somebody of that?
Well, like that is a good question, but I try that. That's why I take this podium to explain myself. I created the stories just on those two chapters. Once you finish the second chapter, from that point on, it's all 100%.
Sure.
And I've also had, there was actually something that fell in my favor in a way of writing those two chapters that way. Amityville Horror got bombarded and just, you know, sued constantly because it said true, not based on true. And that's where we came up based on true events for the book. So,
well,
I hope that answers your question.
I actually vaguely remember back in 1979 when the Lutzes appeared on a talk show. It was about the time that the movie was coming out. I was only 5 years old, but I do actually remember this because my mom had kind of an interest in what was, you know, the movie and what was going on there. I remember George Lutz being asked the question, how much of this is true? And George Lutz actually said, well, for the most part, or most of it's true.
They say that about that horrible Haunting in Connecticut movie, too.
Oh, well, that movie was terrible.
Yeah, that got exploded. Did you guys watch the original documentary on that?
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, but now, aren't there comments about the movies rather than the story?
They just destroyed it. I thought it was a lot better being told the way it was told on Discovery than the movie was ridiculous.
Well, see, that's kind of a big problem whenever it comes to anything in, you know, paranormal.
That's a huge amp up, you know. And for anybody that's listening too, all the paranormal activity that I discuss in the book is true.
Okay.
So I think that we could clear that up for a lot of people. You know?
So you're saying that you relied on maybe some folklore and stories for the first couple because you didn't
really bring your attention into it and try to give you a little bit of a footing of where the story was going.
I understand. Okay. All right.
Okay.
So I'm really curious because I've got to imagine as a child in a place, in a house like this, that you feel somehow separate or different from other kids. What's that like? What's that experience like as a kid?
After the second experience in the home, I think I mentioned it before, we had a wonderful childhood. I mean, it was beautiful. I mean, we didn't have, you know, little paranormal activity. You know, we watched the dimmer switch spin back and forth and the chandelier go bright to dim once in a while. That's all really happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then when, by the time I was 12 years old, of course, everything had exploded. And I think growing up in the teens, we really didn't say nothing. But, you know, deep down in your soul, you knew then that you better make good decisions in life and be kind to others because you do go somewhere. And that played always in the back of my mind. And I try to live by that because I try to be kind to people. I don't try to be a bastard. I don't think it was anything. I wasn't psychologically, you know, destroyed or damaged or shy or anything.
All right.
I just kept it to myself. And I think later on in my late teens, I always seemed to be drawn to people who basically had a ghost story.
Sure.
You know, and then I would tell them a little bit what happened to me, and they would ramble on and go, man, this happened to me. You know, and
sure.
I ended up performing a huge circle of people.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
So, Kim, did I hear that you had a question?
I was just trying to sneak in there real quick.
Sure. No, it's okay.
Yeah, I know. Darren only touched on it a little bit earlier, but he alluded to the fact that 14 people or more had the experiences connected with this home. This is his story in his book.
Right.
But he did mention that there were a lot more people. And from what I understand, some of these incidents were, when things were really getting bad, the police were called. And so there's a lot more to it beyond this. The stories in the book. Am I right, Darren?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I remembered when it's the first thing that you could actually show an adult and to have them actually all see what you were seeing. In one way, you felt vindicated and terrific inside, like, see, I wasn't lying.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, you know, now there is such things as monsters.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Know? Did you ever feel
okay,
crazy?
So, what was that?
Did you ever think you were crazy?
No.
Okay.
No.
But
I'm very, very, very sure, very secure, you know, very positive. To this day, I've always have a very positive outlook on things, you know.
Yeah.
So basically, how did this, you know, affect you in the long term? Did you ever have to, you know, go to any kind of therapy? And if you did go to any kind of therapy, you didn't have to do that? Okay.
You know, I don't think I would. You know, like, it was like we talked before, a therapist, you know, you go to them, they're going to always try to find the scientific route or prescribe you something.
Sure.
I know what I saw. I know what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you sound like you know what you saw beyond faith. Deep inside of you, you know what you saw.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. To tell you the truth, I stopped going to church when I made my communion. And that was it. I didn't go to church anymore.
I was just going to ask if
you know, I wasn't really this diehard. I was probably the only non-diehard Catholic in my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't care to go to church, you know. Didn't hate church. But after this happened, you know, I have a great faith in God. But again, still, I don't go to church and I don't preach the gospel to nobody.
Sure.
You know, I give you a little advice, you know. Maybe you can act a little differently. You're not going to like where you're going.
So does your family's Catholic then?
Yes.
Now, I mean,
is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, you may have answered this earlier, but did anybody ever suggest that you do an exorcism or anything like that?
Yeah, did you guys ever have clergy in there?
Absolutely, and the house was blessed several times, and it just made the thing go across the street to my cousin's house.
Hmm.
So exorcism's completely out of it. The thing will just move.
Hmm.
You know? And it really did. It actually went after we had left. And I think there was another question you wanted to ask me, too. You know, did anything happen after we left?
Yeah. And on the road, actually, too, just in the area.
Just to get back with after we had left the home, a family had moved in. But before that transition of the sale and everything, whatever we were dealing with had moved over to my cousin's house and wreaked havoc on them. And then when the new occupants had taken over, they were only in the house for about 2 weeks. They left all their belongings, everything, and hightailed it out of there. And then the lights moved in, and they actually stayed for a couple of years. But like I told you, they came forward and told me that the house had actually destroyed their family, again, with the drinking and everything. Everybody got affected.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, did you guys ever bring anything like any investigators or, you know, psychic mediums or anything like that who could have, you know, maybe given you some kind of clarity on what was in your home?
At the time, there was, again, you didn't talk about it, so to our knowledge, there was no one, probably except for the Catholic Church, we could have probably turned to.
Sure.
Recently, no. You know, I haven't even explored that avenue.
Okay.
I kind of feel I know what's in that house, and it's all no good.
Yeah.
So with all of that darkness in your childhood and everything else, do you feel like darkness follows you, or do you think that you've sort of left that part of you behind?
That's a good question.
That's what I'm here for.
I do feel, but again, I think everybody feels a little dark sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Is that something from the house, or is it just me being a human being?
Yeah.
For the most part, I'm a very positive person. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm conceited or stuck up or anything.
It's okay to say you're a positive person.
What's that?
I said it's okay to say you're a positive person.
And I would also like to mention, you know, just for a second to all of you, we just recently, a good friend of mine, his son is stricken with autism. And we've now decided to donate proceeds of the book to children with autism.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Well, there you go. I mean, great. At least something will come out of all that darkness.
Absolutely. See, that's the point I was making. There's a lot of light, actually.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, and that's a good thing, and maybe that's one of the things when you tell your story is that you tell it, you know, about the light that came out of the darkness, because I think that's a message that anybody can get behind.
Yeah.
So, okay, so here's the deal. Tell me where people can get your book, where they can go to learn more about you and the house on Burley Pond Road and all of that.
Okay, you can purchase the book now at Barnes & Noble. And if they're sold out, which I hope, you can go to Hurley. You can go to hurleypond.com.
Okay.
And you can order it right through our website and order it through Amazon. It only takes a couple days to get.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Very good.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm sorry I missed the first part of your interview. I'd love to read your book, so I'll have to check that out. Sounds like the proceeds.
I'm always open for questions.
Great. Okay.
After you read the book, and if you have any really deep questions you want to ask me, feel free to either get in touch with me through Facebook or give me a call.
Oh, I totally will.
Or I'll call you, one or the other.
Okay. I'll totally take you up on that. So no worries there. So we're going to go to another quick break. When we come back, we're going to actually talk to Kim about his group, which is called Ghost Breakers. And I'm looking forward to that. So we will be back in just a couple minutes on Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Thank you, Darren.
Thank you, Darren.
Thank you. Have a good night, guys.
Thank you.
You too.
Bye. Hey, this is Tanya.
And this is Stacy.
And we're from Morning with Tanya and Stacy.
Make sure to tune in Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern,
6 a.m. Pacific, as we have segments which include, but are certainly not limited to, DB University on Mondays,
My Useless Facts Every Day, Coffee Advice, and Stacy's Spontaneous Outbursts, of course.
We have been known to test every emotion known to man, and we want you to join in on the fun.
Come get your ab workout as you join in with laughter and comedy
right here on ZTalkRadio.com.
Did you know that you can talk to your favorite show hosts from the ZTalk Radio Network? Check out the forum and see what it's all about at ZTalkRadio.com.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. I'm acting as if I've been here all night and that I'm supposed to be here. So I'm taking ownership of this. So, Rick.
Yes.
We have a new sponsor.
We do.
We do. And so excellent. we wanted to do the world premiere of our new sponsor this evening. So,
okay. I cannot wait to hear this.
I know. Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Guy Who Wants His Own Paranormal TV Show.
Mr. Guy Who Wants His Own Paranormal Show.
You wear your beans with pride and your t-shirt three sizes too small, even though you have the body of a 98-pound video game nerd. Every location you visit may have a gift shop and thousands of visitors, but somehow you still get possessed by something evil.
You're dragging me straight to hell.
It may look like a bug to the rest of the world, but to you it's a demonic orb, and it wants to eat your soul. So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Overly Dramatic. Your acting may not be all that great, but you sure look awesome every time you see yourself in the mirror. Budweiser Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
That's right.
Okay.
Budweiser, baby.
Hold on a second. Two things here. One.
Oh, I know what's coming.
Okay, my editorial, what was that, last week or the week before about, you know, Zach?
Wait. Before you say it, I would like to point out this is not about any particular show. It is about people who want to be on shows like that.
Come on, Karen. Are you for...
Kim, did you recognize any television show specifically in that ad?
Not specifically.
See?
Okay, well, you know what? If
I'm trying to go the middle of the road here.
Okay, if a retired police officer says that commercial has nothing to do with Zach Bagans of Ghost Adventures, I'll go with that.
Yes, that's right. So, I want to thank Teresa. I almost had a Teresa's husband, Wade West, also known as the Big Wolf. He did the vocals for that show, or for that ad, which we will be playing again next week when Teresa is in the chat room so she can hear. And my husband Jim did the announcer voice. So, and it was kind of a collaboration. This is the first time that we have done something like that, and we didn't do it to Rick. So Rick was in on this one. Yay, yes. Rick!
Yay!
I know. Do you feel like you're with the cool kids now? You feel like you're sitting at the cool kids table?
Who, me?
You.
Me. I am the lord of the cool kids here, man. Jamie just said whatever.
Okay, so here's the deal. We're going to be talking to Kim now about his group, Ghost Breakers.
Oh, hello.
Hello. Hello. You think you can follow Kim? Up that totally awesome Bud Light ad, Kim?
Kowalczyk.
I don't know. That's a tough act to follow.
I think you'll do just fine. I'm interested in your group because you guys do things differently than other mm-hmm. groups. And first of all, are you former police officer or are you still a police officer, Kim?
No, I'm retired. I was with the military, and I was a detective in the military. Okay.
Oh, so were you CID?
Yeah, actually. How'd you know that?
Oh, okay. Okay. I had friends in the military.
And anyway... and the rest of the guy, we have some, the group is made up of some local state officers, and also some of the other people are, you know, they're hand chosen for their career skills that would they could adapt to what we were doing. We have some people, all of them were former corrections or police officers at one time, but we have realtors for background investigations on different places and stuff like that. And my sister, who's got a master's in psychology, I can't talk about her bit what she does because it's of a sensitive nature. But
I thought you were going to say, "Or you'd have to kill us."
No, it's not that bad. But
like, bring it on, tough guy. So, okay, now on your website, Kim, you say that you're not ghost hunters and you're not debunkers. And by the way, I love how you make that distinction because I make that distinction as well. Mm-hmm. But now how is it that you're able to apply investigative skills as a police officer or former police officer into, you know, ghost hunting. I mean, you can't exactly cuff and stuff a spirit, you know what I'm saying?
Right. So, and I have to apologize for my website. It's in dire need of updating. What it is police officers, what it basically brings is a discipline to what we do. We're used to investigating is an exact science. There's protocols and methods to follow. And that's what we do when we do a paranormal, what we call them examinations now. I'll get into that. But that's what it is. It's basically a discipline. It's like you said, there's no cuffing and stuffing anybody. But it's just a relentless going after something. When I say not ghost hunters, we're not a social group. We don't meet on the weekends to go to cemeteries and things like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that or what people do. That's not us. That's not what we do. Everybody's got pretty much hectic schedules, and we are fortunate enough to be able to pick and choose what we do or don't do. And if we feel it's merited, or if it's got several documented incidents or cases that people, you know, that's been around, and you might take it if they call us. But we're not doing one a weekend, or I know I see some people on the internet saying they've done 100 this year, or, you know.
No, chances are they did 5 this year.
Yeah, if we do 3 a year, you know, that's a lot for us.
So when you say you do 3 a year, I'm going to imagine that as a police officer, when you investigate something, you don't go in once, wave a bunch of instruments around, and then say the guy that he did it in the study with the candlestick. So if that's the case,
it was weird. Mr. Smith, the owner of the of the museum. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right. So if that's the case, then I would imagine that your examinations take place over more than a couple hours.
I pretty much am the one that gets all the cases. People refer them to me if, like, one of the other group members hears about something. But and it's an extensive interview process through emails or phone calls long before I even say I'll take the case, because we're not about, like you said, going in for a couple hours. I can't do anything in a couple hours. You know, it might be taking a couple hours to even just to get to your house. So there's not much you can do, and we're not all about a lot of the gadgets either. There's a lot of talking to people. There's a lot of sitting and checking into the place when we're there. We don't do background on like an individual home, because we don't want to get any preconceived notions of what might be there. You know, because then you start to look for stuff instead of actually take in what is actually happening. And we tell the homeowner right away, if it's a homeowner or business, that this is not once and done. You know, this is what we do. We will be coming back over an extended period of time. And if you're okay with that, you know, we'll come. I mean, we will go with their schedule and how, you know, when we can come back, you know, according to our schedules also, and we'll work things out. But, we're not, you know, bombard them and say, we're coming in for a couple hours. We'll do it. We didn't get any ghosts. See ya. It's just not what we're about.
Okay, so I call Ghost Breakers and I say, help Kim, my house is haunted. What process do you use from that point? Because all you have right now is me saying my house is haunted.
Right. I'm a real big person on this. And my very first question is always, why? Why do you think your house is haunted? Okay, and I don't mean because I got junk flying off the walls. I mean, why do you personally think it's haunted? Why do you think there's a ghost doing what is happening? Because everybody says, you know, if you look at anybody on the internet that does pictures or EVPs or anything like that, they're saying this is a ghost and this is a ghost. But yet, if somebody asks them to look at their photographs, they're telling everybody else that their stuff is no good.
They'll
defend their own, and they cut down everybody else's.
You're right.
So I need to know why. You know, why do you think yours is definitely a ghost? And if they come up with a good enough story, that's when we start the talking process. You know, it's it doesn't have to be a really big, like Darren's case or what we were just talking about. I mean, if just somebody's having a little bit of problems or they're not feeling right about something, it might be worth looking into, but it's a long interview process before we get in our cars and go anywhere.
Sorry, Karen, did you have a question?
No, I was just one, actually a little bit. Okay, yes, I do.
Okay.
So, I know you can't give me specifics based on clients that you've had, but right. I'm really curious as to what types of answers you get to that question, because you're asking a question other than, I think my house is haunted because my doors slam by themselves. You're asking a psychological, what is it in you that
right.
believes? Okay, so exactly. What kind of answers do you get to that?
A lot of times people will start and they'll go into their background and what's happening in the house and this, and they get into things like, well, you know, I don't know, this is the doors are rattling or the windows are rattling or I'm seeing things like that. And then it goes into, well, why do you think you're seeing these? And then you get into deeper things of things that may have happened before. They may be having problems at home. They may be having, you know, you asked earlier about, somebody did about drugs, or has anybody had alcohol problems
mm-hmm.
in the past?
Yeah, that was
well,
me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than come out and actually ask people that, we dig. Basically, we scratch at the wound until they give up, you know, give up the ghost.
So are you saying I was too fluffy with Darren? I should have kept going at it?
No, that's fine. You did good. But that's the way we work. And then if there are other underlying reasons that why they really believe that this is some, you know, it's not them, it's something else causing it, then we go out and look. But we, you know, we get mm-hmm. some, I had a lady email me today about ghost hunting and this, that, you know, and after talking to her just maybe 4 or 5 emails over the course of the day, it turns out that her oldest son was killed a couple of years ago, covered in monoxide poisoning with a couple of his friends. They'd been out partying, fell asleep mm-hmm. in the car with the car running. You know, so she's got a little bit of tragedy there. Now, you know, things are happening.
So she might want to believe that then.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And she might want to. A lot of people don't understand, and I don't understand why they don't do it. I've done it before, but most people don't. They want to go to cemeteries. They want to go to all these places that they hear about. Yet every family I know has lost somebody by the time they're in their 20s or 30s. And I don't understand why people don't look into their own families. They'll look into everybody else's, but they never look into their own. I don't know.
Now, it says on your website, you know, not debunkers. You know, one thing that I find really interesting about modern about this new school of paranormal investigation and research. It seems that a lot of groups go into it, or even on the television shows, they go into it, you know, we're going to debunk this or disprove it. So basically you're starting with the premise that you think these people are lying or they're completely insane.
Exactly. Yeah, that's
Roderick
Dance, yeah.
Exactly, and people don't even take the time to even look the word up.
I know, it drives me crazy.
And they use it because they hear it on TV, and right. because debunking is easy. I can mm-hmm. if you're telling me you're hearing footsteps, and I walk in there and I step on a loose floorboard, it's debunked, and they say that on the TV all the time. That's what it is. They take the first excuse, say that's your problem, and go on, and you know, and I know
you forgot the high five, Kim.
But, I don't know. I've always hated the word, maybe because I know what it means, and I know that the people, like you said, they don't...
It's insulting.
It is, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, how can you call yourself a paranormal investigator, a ghost hunter, or anything like that, if you don't believe in the first place?
Right.
You know, call yourself a paranormal debunker, if that's what you're going to call yourself.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's insulting to people to go in, and I mean, you know, I blog about it. I don't think I've hysterically blogged about the use of debunk in a while, but maybe I should again. Maybe it's time.
Hey, Kim, from what I understand, you guys have a massive gathering coming up soon.
Well, I don't know how massive it's going to be. We're hoping.
Mm-hmm. And where are you guys having this?
I got the idea a couple of years ago from watching all the conventions out there and people talking about how much money they're spending and everything like that. So mm-hmm. I got the idea to see if we could gather people, not quite like a flash mob, but that meant that type of a thing. Everybody in one place, all at the same weekend, at the same time, all of the same, backgrounds of belief, the paranormal community. So I picked Gettysburg, Pennsylvania,
nice.
Because it's a very popular place for, historians, ghost hunters, and all that, although I don't believe the battlefields are haunted, but that's another story. Mm-hmm. And what it is basically, even, and there's nothing wrong with the conventions. I'm not saying anything's wrong with the conventions, but they do get expensive. They just have phenomenology out in Gettysburg, or just south of Gettysburg at the hotel there, and that's $175 right off the top just to get in to the venue, and then you have everything else is a la carte. Mm-hmm. So you still have to pay for your hotels and your food and everything else. So this whole thing is we're trying to get as many people interested in the paranormal, groups, individuals, whatever, just to go to Gettysburg and enjoy Gettysburg for what it has. It's chock full of ghost tours and all kinds of museums and everything like that. And what it basically is to get people, maybe it's a unity thing, to get people to meet each other, say hi. You know, this is the person I've seen on the internet for 3, 4, 5 years,
yeah.
And it's, now I'm actually getting to meet them.
Yeah.
I have a former client right outside Gettysburg, actually, like right in, it's in Gettysburg, but not on the battlefield itself, who owns a 100-acre farm. And they graciously offered to use their farm for 3 hours for a meet and greet for all the people coming.
Uh-oh, that's so, what the farmer at Woodstock did.
Yeah, she's got 100 acres, so we'll see what happens. It's a real short thing. It's 3 hours. I'm not giving a location out until just, you know, in July, just beforehand. And then
so that means the dirty hippies aren't going to show up and
Yeah, exactly. And what will happen is there'll be a sign at the road to her farm. So, and I'll just give out the main road going through. That way, like you said, we won't have all the just curiosity seekers popping in. It'll be people that know that it's going on. But hopefully people will show up, and if it works out well, then we'll see if we can do it again next year and see if we can make a yearly thing out of it.
Well, and I think that also that something like that would be good, because information sharing, I feel, is pretty important. And I think that not enough people get outside of their little insular teams where they, you know, wave around their meters and do those kinds of things. And I think to be able to rub shoulders with people and talk to them and hear the way they do things can only be a good thing.
Yeah, I believe that wholeheartedly. And I think people will jump on board on this because, I mean, all it is they have to do their hotel and their meals, and whatever else they want to do in town is fine.
Right.
You know, they don't have to worry about meeting schedules or the different workshops or investigations. There are places in town that offer that stuff. If they want to do it, they can do it, you know. But they don't, like I said, they don't have to, you know, they don't have to do anything. This is all on them just to go out and meet people. Hopefully a lot of people will show up.
Yeah, very good.
Anyway, let me ask you something about Kim. And maybe you feel the same way I do. Do you think, like, you know, ghost tours can be a little bit cheesy?
Ghost tours?
Aren't they supposed to be cheesy? Isn't that what they're all about?
Yeah, it will depend on the ghost tour you go to. I've gone to just about everyone in Gettysburg. I just happen to like Gettysburg. I happen to like the area and the countryside and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But as far as the ghost story and hunting places out there, I mean the tours, I've gone to them all, and some of them are, yes, cheesy, and they're funny, and, you know, they all try to take a tidbit of history and build on that. Mm-hmm. One place out there does have actually good ghost tours. Some of them have a lot of history, but actually one of them takes you to Gettysburg College, and it walks you on the tour through Gettysburg College and gives you all the stories that has to do with the college itself. And the college was there long before, you know, before the battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there are some that are good. They wrap a little bit of history in with, because there is a lot of history there.
Sure.
I would expect that if they're in other cities or whatever, that they're just building on, ghost stories themselves. Yeah, I can understand it being cheesy.
Yeah.
But in Gettysburg, they have, you know, a lot more to go with. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, Kim, you have said something that I feel is very shocking, and I'm hoping that you will be willing to elaborate it for me. No, it's you're in trouble, mister. No,
yeah, I know it.
So, Gettysburg is considered by many, many, many people, including guys in tight black T-shirts and bleens, as being ridiculously haunted, and yet you just flew in the face of all of that popular opinion and said, you don't believe that those battlefields are haunted. And so I was hoping you might be willing to elaborate on that.
Oh, boy. Now, okay, I will give you my opinion, and this is my opinion.
Yes.
So, and my opinion is based on my experiences.
Understood.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I don't believe. Now, this is really going to get you some phone calls later on, or some.
We can handle it.
I don't believe in battlefields, and I don't believe in prisons and cemeteries, and I never go to any of them. The reason being is that the popular belief, and I believe we're all agreeing that a ghost or a spirit is just a human being at one time and now in another form. I'm okay in assuming that, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but I can go with that premise. Yeah,
right. In general, that's what people believe.
Yes, I will.
Spirits. Okay, now I am. You know, I try to be a simple person, and I don't. I'm always revert back to simplicity and logic. And the battlefields, we'll just talk about the battlefields and it'll, you know, filter into the others. But the battlefields were a horrific place. I mean, this is one of the most horrific battles ever.
Yes.
And I don't see anyone killed in battle or any place that was not pleasant in life for them to come back or hang out and stay in death when they didn't have to, and I don't believe they have to.
Yeah.
Okay. Now there are. Granted, I believe that there is always an exception to the rule, but that's another story. Also, if you go to Gettysburg or any of these towns, and you go and to any of these ghost tours or listen to the stories about the places, you'll always hear the ghost stories are always in the town and around the area.
Yes. Yeah.
They're chock full of stories in Gettysburg, the town. The closest town over there, Fairfield, the Confederate Retreat, Cash Town Inn. These are all the famous places, but they're not the battlefield. These are places that people went and frequented and lived, worked, and died in these places, and not the battlefield itself. And it goes into cemeteries where I don't feel that anybody would stay in a place that, like a cemetery or a prison,
where their body is.
Yeah,
right. Or any of those places. These are places that people, with every fiber of their being, try to stay out of when they were alive.
Sure.
So here's my question.
That's my opinion. Why I don't believe these deaths haunted. But I do believe there are places around Gettysburg, that, especially the college, probably, and some of the places in town that are, or could be.
Okay,
So here's my
question. Every place out here in the Pacific Northwest is a former whorehouse, and all of those former whorehouses are haunted. So my question is then, following your theory, would you say that those whorehouses are not haunted by the young women who worked them, but perhaps their Johns who visited them, because the Johns had positive associations where the young women didn't?
Exactly, and that is what I would believe if there was any kind of activity in these places. Yes, any place that the person frequented during life that they enjoyed, I would believe that they would go back there. And I don't believe everybody becomes a ghost, and I believe that the moving on process is a process, and I believe everybody does move on. I don't believe people can force the spirit to move on. Send them into the light, and even if they could, I would think, my personal opinion is that would be an irresponsible act to send somebody into the light.
Because how do you know the light is good?
What?
How do you know the light is good?
Well, see, the problem with everybody that says they sent them into the light, or they may help them move on or whatever, you don't know where you sent them.
Right.
Right.
Because there's no way to double check your work, and maybe that's just the police officer and he's, you know, talking. But there's no way to check your work, so how do you know that you didn't send sweet old Aunt Tilly to an eternity in hell?
So true. So why does sweet old Aunt Tilly stay around as a ghost? No, why does sweet old Aunt Tilly stay around as a ghost? But maybe, you know, your cousin Horatio doesn't.
Well, like I was saying, I feel the moving on process is probably it's a process, and that everybody does move on. But what would keep somebody back is maybe they still have a message to bring on. Most people they die suddenly. Even people that know they're going to die, don't maybe not realize the exact second they're going to die, or because of how ill they are, they can't express themselves to where they're, you know, they want to, if nothing else, to tell the people it's going to be all right that are around them. And I think they do, and I think they stay around for to leave a message. Now, the problem being is that the message is, I don't believe their time frame is the same as ours, so, or how they perceive time. And mm-hmm. so if they're here around 100 years, they're still trying to get their message across.
Right.
Now, 100 years later, they might not be able to get their message across, and that's why some spirits are still around.
Okay.
Sure.
But then again, you know, who knows? I mean, just because, you know, I might get the message. The message might not be intended for me, but it might be intended that I pass the message on. So there's a whole, I don't know, he really gets involved.
No, that's okay. I like hearing other people's philosophies. And you're one of a very few people who I've ever heard say, you know, I think I don't like the idea of sending them to the light. I think that's irresponsible. And one of the members on my team, Bert Coates, is pretty well known around here for saying that too. And when he said that, that was something that really resonated with me. And I'd never thought that it was our job or our responsibility to ever send somebody on anyway, because I just think that that's playing God, and that's not something I choose to do.
You do, like I said too, you can't check your work. So what do you know? You don't know what you have done,
right?
If you've done damage or good,
so. Right? So, how do you check your work in your paranormal examinations, Kim?
Oh, to check my work.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no. I don't know if there's really a checklist. Like you can say, okay, well, you know, you can follow a certain procedures or certain methods. It's what we do, and what the thing is like you said earlier, is that we keep going back. Well, when we go back the second time, we do the same things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whether we got something or we didn't get something, we do it again, and that's probably the only way you can really check what you're doing. Sometimes you get stuff that you can't explain. We just recently did a large hotel, and we got some things, but not a lot for something that we were there for 2 months. We went for 2 months to do this, and we only got a few things. But now, over the hundreds and hundreds of photographs we've taken, all of a sudden we're coming up with other things that we missed during the initial reviews. So, I mean, it's a process, and you just got to keep reviewing and going over and not looking at something and say, well, we don't throw anything out. Whether mm-hmm. we like it, we don't like it, or whether, you know, he says it's a creaky floorboard. I'm not, you know, okay, fine, but I'm not disregarding it like some TV shows tell you.
Yeah.
To do.
Yeah.
But,
I would say that's personally a big problem that I have with the television shows. Otherwise, it's a good entertainment.
I don't know. I like the debunked with the high five. I've always felt that was really, really a valid thing that happens.
Or the fist pound.
Yeah. On to the next. Poof. We did a good job. We went in and made it feel stupid.
Yeah, I lost faith in that one a long time ago.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I will tell you that I interviewed, and I'll make this really quick. I interviewed somebody who had been on Ghost Hunters, and they were one of the debunking episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that this couple was left feeling embarrassed and just everything else after the show went in and did that, it was really a shame to see that, because these were people who genuinely felt that something was going on in their home, and to have a show come in and just go, yeah, this is our debunking episode, so debunked, fist pump, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was sad. It was really sad, and I felt badly when I talked to them.
Yeah. I think a lot of that show has to do with one of the show's main characters. I call them characters because I believe they're acting. And their attitude about the whole thing. And they always come off like they're looking like a tough guy, or they're acting like a tough guy. And right from the very beginning, there was one gentleman that they always gave a hard time to. And I think they did a the Eastern State Penitentiary.
Dude, run!
And the run mm-hmm. dude, right?
Yeah.
Well, after he left the show, right after he left the show, because of that other gentleman that they still have on the show that's scared of everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Then all of a sudden their policy changed to, if in doubt, get out.
Right.
If you remember. So, you know, I mean, that's a real big flip-flop from one to the other. you know, you're really chastising one and telling me he's no good, and then 5 minutes later you're saying, well, no, that's the thing to do. I, you know, one way or the other, that's for me.
Yeah, so, good point. Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
But they are the most popular show, and they're making the big bucks, and so I guess that's what it's about. Yeah, I feel
for better
or worse. Yeah, but if people keep that in mind, I think, you know, it's a show, and, you know, if they don't keep an audience, they don't get paid. That's
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, you know, Kim, do you have anything you want to shill here? You know, website, books, anything like that that you're working on right now?
Where can people find Kim?
Yeah.
People can find Kim on Facebook under Kim Ghostbreakers Kowalczyk. And also, they can
spelled the usual way.
Yeah, of course, right? They throw Ghostbreakers up there, Kim Ghostbreakers. I'm sure it'll pop up.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, the other thing we got going on there right now is the 2011 Gettysburg, PA Paranormal Enthusiast Gathering. That's on there, too. I'm sure that, you know, they can come up with gathering and whatever. It'll come up there. And the only other things I have got, we have a small website out there called GhostbreakerSocial.com. And that's a little interactive thing, like a Facebook type thing where you can join for free and make your own page and, you know, and interact with other people. And then, of course, there's ghostbreakers.com, which I have to get updated. There's a lot of stuff I have to add to that. And
you know what? I think ever since I met you and you started coming on Paranormal Underground, you've been saying that, Kim.
I know. I never get to it. I look at it, I come back. Do. You know, I was like, oh, geez. And even my own group is yelling at me to update. We have a new guy on the crew, Pennsylvania State Trooper, and he's not even on there yet. So I definitely have to do something.
Well, if they're yelling at you, you can tell them you got fingers. You update it. See,
that's what I should do. Have them do it.
That's right. Okay, very good. Thank you so much, Kim. I'm really glad you came on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much, and thanks for lending your insight with the whole Hurley Pond thing.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, thanks. All right, well, everybody, thank you for listening to our show tonight. On next week's show, we're going to have David M. Roundtree, AES. He is the Director and Chief Science Advisor, Mr. Spock, of Scientific Paranormal Investigation Research Information and Technology, which is, of course, Spirit Lab. We're going to have him on next week. And the following week, we are going to have a special guest. It is going to be Mr. Bobby Mackey of Bobby Mackey's Kentucky. Now, this is one I'm looking forward to because I really want to, you know, ask him, you know, the big questions, you know, about, you know, having people in his place and how he really feels about, you know, whether or not the place is haunted. So we're definitely going to hear it from, you know, from the
horses. We're not going to interview him about music?
Well, of course we'll interview him about music.
Okay.
That's his whole life right there.
Ah, very good. Okay. Yeah, you know what? A guy in a super-duper haunted place who likes music, that's my kind of guy.
That's right.
All right. Didn't mean to interrupt. Go on, Rick.
No, that's quite all right. I'm just, you know, saying that's what I'm really looking forward to, so.
Me too, yeah.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Okay. All right. And then we're going to have a rerun show, and then we're having back the most requested, please bring this guy back, and that's going to be Dr. Barry Taff. And I don't exactly remember the date, but if you go to paranormalunderground.net, it'll be
May 12th, I think it is.
Oh, see? Good for you.
That's why my name's first.
It is. You deserve to have your name first. I didn't just say that.
All right, well, I guess that pretty much does it for this Thursday, Karen.
Yeah, so thanks for listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Tune in next week, 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 11, way to do math in your head, Karen, Eastern and other times in those flyover states. We'll see
8
you
to 10 p.m. Central.
Oh, okay. We'll see you next week. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net. And join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.